when I said that I was tired when I came in here today. I mean, I really was exhausted. So, my day today, got up at 4, Canberra time. That's 2 o'clock in the morning, your time. Meditated, showered, had some breakfast, and then afterwards went to these Venerable Thich Quang Ba's temple in Canberra, where he was hosting the Australia Sangha Association AGM and also Vaisak Day. Now, you may know that we have things like Buddhist Society of Western Australia, we have Monks Monastery, we have a monastery down in Albany, we have a monastery over in Rolling Stone, and we have Dhammasala Nuns Monastery. We do have many monasteries, but we also do have other organizations. We try to help. Oh, opening the water, that's very kind. We have many, many other places which we try and create some peace and harmony with. And so we have a Waisak every year. Our Waisak ceremony is going to be on June the 4th, but we have many other Waisaks. That's one of the reasons why the Waisak, which is the celebration of the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and final passing away, that is celebrated all over Australia. And one of the nice things that different traditions celebrate Waisak on a different day, especially this year because the full moon, sometimes it mostly falls in May, but today our full moon of Waisak, we're celebrating the first full moon in June, in early June, which people say that's confusing. I say, no, it's not confusing. It just gives us more opportunities to celebrate Waisak more times. So this is about the third or fourth Waisak already I've celebrated, so I don't mind. But sorry, okay, I'm not dying, don't worry. So I just got to stop laughing at my own jokes. So to be able to go to many places to celebrate, it does take a bit of extra energy. So this morning, just we did that celebration, and the reason we did it in Canberra because we wanted to sort of make those contacts with the politicians in Canberra. We make those contacts for a good reason. One of those reasons is that they can be so helpful. You know, there was one occasion about 14 years ago that there was this young Sri Lankan woman. Sorry, you gave me permission. This young Sri Lankan woman, she was practicing nursing, actually in studying it, getting her qualifications at Curtin University. And unfortunately, her husband, in order to pay for this, to finance it, he had two jobs at the time here in Perth. And coming back, I think, in the middle of the night or early in the morning, unfortunately, that the car crashed, probably asleep, and was killed. And so you can imagine what that's like when somebody, she had two children at the same time. And they lost their husband, they lost their main money provider, and they were still like a student at university. And it was just like a tragic. But anyhow, the Sri Lanka community over here, we did a collection of her just to pay some of the quick bills, instant bills, but then the long-term problems of how can you be of service, how can you help? And so at that time, as many of you know, I used to go and teach at Curtin University, and I got to be very friendly with the Vice-Chancellor at the time, who was Professor Jeanette Hackett. I don't know if you've ever been, how many of you have done your studies at Curtin University, but you know, she was the VC, the Vice Chancellor. So I got on the phone to the Vice Chancellor's office. It surprised me even. I said, this is Ajahn Brahm here, Buddhist monk, you know, I've gone to Curtin University many times. They've given me this John Curtin medal. What do you receive those medals for? And I said, oh, really? Yes, okay, I'll put you through. So I got straight through to the Vice Chancellor. And that's a very difficult thing to do for most people. But as soon as I got through, I told her what had happened. And I remember she telling me, no trouble. So, no, that's, no, if you say this has happened, we don't need to do any investigation because they trusted me. That's my job. So we got a nice scholarship for her. And so she survived. And she's in our audience this evening. I'm not going to look at her. I'm going to give the game away. Oh, sorry. But actually just reminded me of that. It's a wonderful thing. That's why you go and do these things. And why, you know, we have people who other people respect and can be of service. I love doing that. So it's important to make those relationships. So one of the people over in Canberra this morning was, I think many of you know him, he's one of our first authentic Buddhist, Theravada Buddhist, members of Parliament, Federal Parliament. I know Sam Lim. And I have known him for quite a few years, because before he was a member of Parliament, he joined the police force here in Australia, and in Western Australia. He did so well, they made him, what do they call him, multicultural liaison officer or something for the police. And he got the Policeman of the Year award. He's a very nice man. And then he decided to stand for Parliament, and you know, to his great surprise, he won the seat of Tangi, I think it is. But anyway, this morning, Friday, I was in Canberra, and he gave this beautiful speech. I'm just saying this because, you know, it's a long way till the next election, so I'm not supporting election, don't get involved in politics. But he was saying just how some of his meditation helped him, and a crisis he had with his daughter. His daughter got, I think, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or something, and the daughter was, you know, just a small child, or young anyway, I might get some of the details wrong, but he said just how difficult it was, you know, with, you know, his wife and him just trying to look after this child, because all the family were back in Malaysia. It was just him and his wife, that's all, looking after their child. And it was just so difficult. And then he said that one day they got so stressed out, both of them, and they realized they'd forgotten one thing, their meditation. So they just, both of them, decided to do 1 hour each of walking meditation. He said that changed the whole ball game. They got some energy coming up inside of them, some positive energy. You know, it's very difficult when you're so alone trying to look after a kid, which obviously takes most of the, not most, but all the attention. But then when they started to meditate, they had more power, more energy, you know, to deal with his problems. And at the very end, he was saying his daughter is still with them. She survived, got into remission. Hard work and very difficult work. But that's actually sometimes what happens when we know how to meditate. Not deeply meditate, but know the basics and how that can regenerate the energies inside of us. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, when I came back today, this was in the morning, and after just leaving Canberra, left the temple at 10 o'clock in the morning and got to airports, but flights cancelled and all sorts of delays, having to rebook on another flight, make sure that I let the monks know, so they weren't going to think I hadn't arrived, and then eventually getting here at 6 p.m. So that was, I was exhausted. And you saw me, Venerable Dhammadipa. I really truly, and many of you others saw me, I really was exhausted. And I've got a talk to give at 7:30. What should I do? The thing is, I've experienced this many, many times. And just as like Sam Lim said, you meditate. When you meditate, it's amazing how you can get your mental energies really, as they say, firing on all cylinders. Physically, I still feel tired, but mentally, I feel alert now. And I've used this many, many times. It's one of those aspects of this meditation, what you hear here, which can help you in so many different situations in your life. When for one reason or another, you are stressed out, not your fault, you're looking after others, you know, you're tired, something happens and you can't get to your bed, you've got to do this, you're traveling overseas, whatever it is, there'll always be occasions where you work much more than you should be doing. So what do? You learn how to rest in this moment. I mentioned those words carefully, rest in this moment. You get so much energy coming up. The first time I learned this, I've told this story in other contexts before, the first time I learned this was again during my final exams as a university. Final exam, 3-hour paper in quantum theory or general relativity in the morning, another one in quantum physics in the afternoon, crazy stuff. 3-hour paper in the morning, 3-hour in the afternoon. You can imagine just how that drains your energy in your brain. After that, you really put all your effort into it, focusing on trying to answer those questions correctly. And then afterwards, you know, my inspiration, I don't know where I got these inspirations from, because no one told me to do this, decided not to have any lunch. I had a breakfast and a dinner in those days, but no lunch. Instead of lunch, I just meditated. And this is what happens every day when I meditate instead of having lunch. In that half an hour, I could calm my mind down and the energy returned. I brightened up. And I could actually, I probably had more good energy in the afternoon than in the morning. That's why I did very well in the afternoon exams. Doesn't make any sense logically, as far as I know, because, you know, you've been working, and just, you know, using your brain non-stop for 3 hours on really crucial stuff. This was supposed to be my career. The last time I mentioned this story, I always mentioned that if only I'd known I was going to become a monk, I wouldn't have worried so much. But nevertheless, you don't know those things. But it was great because it was important. I could let go and relax just for half an hour at lunchtime. And afterwards, you could feel your mind was clear again. You know, sometimes I get really tired. When I get really tired, sometimes I see some of you and I just cannot remember your name. I'm not getting Alzheimer's disease. What I'm getting is just tiredness. And sometimes you can feel that tiredness. Have any of you ever needed to write an email and you're really tired, or you have to do a report somewhere, or you've got to do anything, and sometimes you're so tired you keep, you know, getting it wrong? I know I've done that many times, writing an article for somebody or other, and you're trying to think of the right words. You know, you're trying to think, you know, just how to put those words together in a meaningful way. One of the things I learned a long time ago, whatever I write, someone's got to read it. And out of just compassion and kindness for people, you don't want to give them too much trouble and thinking, what does Ajahn Brahm mean? Instead, you make it as clear as possible, but not just with clarity, with inspiration, with meaning, so it's got a heart, whatever you write. And if you can do that, then it's good writing. But I can only do that when you've got energy. When that energy, it's not any type of energy either. If I have a couple of cups of coffee or something, the energy is all over the place. Even tea, which I prefer to coffee. I just had one cup of tea when I came back. That was good enough. That gave me that boost of energy. But the most boost came from just sitting down, calming my mind for 15 minutes in the monk's quarters. And the half an hour here as well. Because when you calm the mind down, you get this beautiful energy. It's like focused energy comes up in your mind. You literally wake up and you feel good. That's one of the reasons why any one of you who've got some stressful thing to do, please meditate beforehand. Or relax, get your mind calm and feel that body, feel it wake up, feel the mind become alive again. You know that it in my room over in Serpentine, it was there beforehand when I left about 8 or 9 days ago, I'm sure it's still there now, is the original manuscript of Opening the Door of Your Heart. You know that book, which you know we have on sale over here, it's a book which I wrote. I didn't dictate it, I wrote it, and it was a great exercise because I was on a retreat at the time, I mean my own retreat, not teaching a retreat, and I decided to write for 1 hour every day, just 1 hour, no longer. And I was very disciplined. And the retreats which we used to have, personal retreats, were usually just for 14 or 15 days. And I still got the manuscript. Every now and again I just open it up just to inspire myself. The first half of that manuscript for Opening the Door of Your Heart, which was 54 stories, was finished in those 14 days. And when I wrote it out, I looked at it afterwards. It did not need to be edited. It was like it was, I wrote it out longhand, didn't have any computer. Wrote it out longhand and it's a beautiful manuscript. Hardly any mistakes. What you read there is what you read in the book you have today. Weird stuff. How can that happen? The reason was because I was meditating at the time. Mind nice and peaceful. And you just write it down and it comes out. You don't want to change it. I know we did auction that off to one of our members, but the members passed away, so we got it back. It's almost like a museum piece, it should be anyway. But it's not only meaningful, but effortless. The whole thing was effortless. You know how we actually got that published? It's hard to publish a book, isn't it? You know, even Harry Potter, I mean, how many times did the author have to take it to different publishers before someone could publish it? Not me. You know what I did? We got Ron Story, you know, don't you remember good old Ron Story? He typed it out, he was retired. And I kept on pressing him, come on, is it ready yet, is it ready yet? Because I was going over to Melbourne and I wanted to take it with me because I know there's many publishers in Melbourne. So he typed it up on a CD. Is that old? I can't type. I suppose I can these days on emails, but not like sort of, you know, proper typists. And he typed it out on a CD and he gave it to me, I think, just about an hour or two before I went to Perth Airport to fly to Melbourne. As soon as I flew to Melbourne, and the flights were on time in those days, so straight over to Melbourne University to give a talk, you know, not stopping off anywhere, just as soon as you touch down, off to the university and give a talk. And I still remember this lady came up to me after the talk and said, "That was a very good talk. I work in the publishing industry. If ever you want any of those talks published, please let me know." And all I did next, and this is no exaggeration, I reached into my bag, this bag, or similar one, and I took out a CD, so here you go. And that's opening the door of your heart. And I still remember her name, because she had this wonderful name, Magnolia Flora. Beautiful name. I remember meeting her later on, you know, many years after the book was published. And she told me that just about a year or two after the book was published, you know, she got cancer, and she used that book mostly, she told me, to actually to overcome the cancer which she had, to survive it. I remember when she came to one of my other talks in Melbourne University, and she admitted who she was. And I let her, please let people know, because it's great that they know that all these stories I tell, they have, you know, truth behind them, they're meaningful, they're real. And just, you know, her good karma of just being able to associate with the teachings in that book and to actually help produce them did a huge amount of goodness for her in her life. But the main reason I'm saying this is just how that any of you ever get tired, exhausted, stressed out by all the things which are asked of you in life. This is a great way of overcoming it. Take half an hour out, sit in some room, and then just really learn how to let go properly. Don't waste time by thinking about things or try to inspire yourself with some, you know, story. You have enough information. You don't need more information. You just need the opportunity to see how it works and get yourself inspired. How just after, you know, 15 or half an hour's meditation, you're alive again, you've got oomph. You know, another one of the stupid things I did? I say stupid because, you know, sometimes I do challenge myself. You know, can this really be done? One of the other things which I remember just doing was, with our Singaporean group, Buddhist Fellowship, in those early days, that they wanted to try and present Buddhism in so many different ways to try and make it more attractive, you know, to other members of our community. Because as one of the other people said over in Canberra a day or two ago, Buddhism is in danger of becoming not really relevant to our younger generation. Are we really speaking to their problems, to their difficulties? Or, you know, to the older generation, they are interested in more of the long-term meaning of life, what's going to happen to them after they die. You know, why is there such thing as old age, pain and sickness? But for the younger generation, are we really making contact with them, meaningful contact as Buddhists? Yes, we do have many kids coming to our Dhamma schools, but if those Dhamma schools are just boring, and if they're just telling, you know, more about the Four Noble Truths, yeah, the Four Noble Truths are important, but is that really what those kids need at that point in their life? So anyway, these young people over in Singapore decided to put some of these teachings as a play in a theatre. And I forget what they called this thing. I think it may have been like opening the door of your heart or something. And we had some amazing members over there who were good musicians, and they made all these songs as well. I remember one of those guys, you know, I saw him at the recent New Year's Day, Malcolm, and he moved over here eventually, got a good business going over here. A really, really nice guy, but an amazing musician. So anyway, so they invited me. I had to be part of the play, the theatre, just playing myself. I didn't need to go and get dressed up in a wig or in special clothes. I was Ajahn Brahm. Same old, a bit sort of rumpled. But imagine you get the morning flight from Perth to Singapore. It leaves at 6:30. I could have been on that flight so often. You have to leave here about 3:30, you know, to get to the airport by 4 or 4:30, and just to wait in the airport until it takes off, and you arrive in Singapore just before lunch, and the first show was at 1, the matinee. And so you do this show, you have to be there, get, you know, have a look at some idea of what I'm supposed to do. They said, no, just make it up as you go along, just be yourself. And so we did it, it went okay. But then afterwards there was another show in the evening, and I felt so exhausted. And it was also, it was on a Saturday morning, and you know, Friday evenings, I give a talk here, Friday evenings, a few hours sleep in the monks' quarters, early in the morning to the airport, flying off to Singapore, doing the first show. Everybody else went out for something to eat. I can't do that as a monk, I only eat in the morning times. So I just let them go and eat and whatever. And I found a nice quiet corner of that theatre. No one was there. And then I just sat down and meditated for an hour, just by myself. It was dark. And it was one of those other wonderful experiences afterwards. I just, you know, came out, and the other people had come back from their dinner. I had more energy than they had. And they were surprised, and I was surprised as how you can actually create that energy. Not with, you know, coffee or tea or any other drugs. It just naturally, you know, through your meditation. And that sort of creation of that energy was so helpful, and I've used it many other times as well, just like this evening. I should be incapable of giving a talk. I'm almost 72 years of age now. I'm an old monk. I should just be in bed by now. But you can't do that. It just, you haven't got that sort of in you. The other thing which I learnt about creating energy was one of the first times that, and this is why it becomes helpful for everybody, one of the first times I was a young monk, and I just helped other monks with some of the jobs they had to do. This was where we had this old tradition by Ajahn Chah of, if you're going to ordain as a monk, you have to sew, dye all of your robes. Just before I went off to Melbourne, we did an ordination, as many of you know, at Dhammasara for former Dhimmi, now Soma. Dhimmi used to be our admin officer here. These things inspire me. I don't know if they inspire you, because you saw this lady over in BMICH, was when she first saw me, when I was giving a big talk at this convention centre. She said, this is what I want to be. I want to be a nun in Perth. She didn't tell me that at the time, but then eventually she got a job working as an admin officer. Was that in your time, Don? She was a very good admin officer. So we got to know her, she got to know us, and then eventually she managed to talk Venerable Hasapanya in letting her be an Anagarika in Dhammasara, then a novice for 2 years. And it was only about, was it a week or two ago, that she took the full bhikkhuni ordination. And because, you know, you've seen her all the way through, it was just like, the only way I can describe it, Don, is like a daughter. And the daughter was, you know, doing something much better than getting married, becoming a fully ordained Buddhist nun. Well done. And I enjoy that, because that's something which is really wonderful to see. But they also said they had to sew their own robes. That's what Ayahasapanya has instilled as one of the traditions of Dhammasara. I never told them to do that, but I thought that's amazing. The only way they can do that is everybody else helps out. So it becomes a communal effort. So the other nuns at Dhammasara, they have to support the new candidates so much, they will actually help, spend lots of extra time sewing the robes for them. But in those days, the monks had to actually sew and dye them as well, with a jackfruit dye. So really a lot of work. So this particular occasion, there was these three monks, and they were dyeing their robes. And they hadn't slept for a couple of days. You can't sleep, you have to keep on working. That was why almost a test of endurance for them. You know that sometimes, I remember reading in the Buddhist books when I was young, that to make sure that a monk or nun was really wanted to become a monk or nun, they would actually test them by having them sit outside the front door of the monastery for 3 days. And just to see if they really wanted to become a monk or a nun. And over in Dhammasara, you don't have to do that, you just have to make your own robes. It's just kind of similar. Don't make it too easy. See just what your commitment is. But anyway, over in Wat Bapong, in those days, we had to cut, sew white cloth, sew it all up into the monk's robes, and make the dye and dye it. It took a long time. And these three monks had been up at the dyeing shed 2 nights without sleep, and had another night or two to go before they could finish. I mean, what would you do? You know, I would just felt so sort of sorry for them. I've got compassion, just like every other monk, a nun, and each one of you as well. I said, look, I won't tell if you won't tell. I'll do the dyeing tonight. You go and take, you know, 4 hours of rest. And that's what they did. They didn't argue with me. They were off. You know, I felt so good about that because you could see they were suffering in pain. You know, not physical pain like you've broken a leg or something, but just really, really, really tired. So I did that work for them that night. I hadn't slept that day. I didn't sleep that night because I was busy looking after the dying pot. And then also, in the morning, the bell went at 3 o'clock in the morning, we would get up in Thailand. When the bell went, they all came back, thank you, thank you, thank you. Just in that 4 hours of rest, you know, just meant a lot of difference to them. Me, I went back to the morning chanting. And that morning, I still remember the morning chanting we did in Thailand. It was really depressing, honestly. I'm not just saying that because you didn't have any energy, you know, and just getting up really early in the morning, 3:30, and just chanting. But that morning, Yoso Bhagawa! I had so much energy inside of me, and it was unique. I think the other monks told me, quiet down a bit. But why? And I hadn't slept all night, and I couldn't figure it out, why I was just so full of energy. And I asked one of the senior monks, and that's what they told me. He said, you know, I confess, look, we're not supposed to do this, I'm sorry. You know, that they're supposed to make those robes up for themselves, but I helped. And I said, I had so much energy, why? And he just said, because of kindness. When you're really kind and you sacrifice something, you get a big boost of energy and power back. It's like instant karma. And that's how I was a 72-year-old monk, well, 71, but 72. What was it, May now, June, July, August, only about 3 months. This is actually how you get that energy coming up. And Don, you told me that, Don, I haven't seen him for a few years, he used to be a treasurer, president, almost everything. So he's a good friend as well, a very good Buddhist. How old are you now? 83. Look at him. He walks by himself and just, he can't drive because of sight and stuff. But really amazingly fit and healthy. You're a very good example of what happens when you sacrifice so much for others or for some community and you really put some energy. Elizabeth, how old are you? 83 as well. 89. Amazing. So what about Ron, who's leaving? Ron, how old are you? So, anyway, sometimes it's impressive. And just why do people manage to do things like that, get so much energy up? And it's a lot of the goodness and kindness and sacrifice which we do. And of course that's, being life as a senior monk is quite difficult, I must admit, because we're always working and helping out everywhere. We're like consultants. So there's a number of monasteries over in the East. And as soon as you go over there, they want to talk to you about this, that and the other. They want to help with their fundraising. They want to help with this. Why don't you come and visit us more often? Goodness gracious, you kill me. But nevertheless, it's nice to give as much as you possibly can. But the point is that the energy you get from that is kind of phenomenal. It took me years to figure out where energy really comes from. Doing good, inspiration, sometimes doing things you should never really do. I remember so many years ago that there was one of the ladies over in Singapore, she lost her husband. You know, he died in, I think, the middle of the night. And I got a call. The funeral was on Saturday, and this was a Friday morning. Can you come? Come? I could do the Friday night talk. At that time I was the abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery too. Isn't that enough work? And you want me just to come on an overnight flight from Perth to Singapore and do the funeral service for this woman in the morning? It's a ridiculous thing to ask. It was so ridiculous that I did it. Took the overnight flight. And did a funeral service, and I think came back the next night or something. Stupid thing to do, you'd think, but I liked to test it because it was something which I could do, give for somebody else. And kindness. Did I get sick because of that? No way. It was a beautiful thing to do. An act of, now, don't get any ideas, any of you. I really do need to sleep tonight. So say, can you please come and do some chanting for us? But nevertheless, these are personal experiences. So I want to try and inspire you that sometimes this is what you can do sometimes. It's something which you don't have to do. No one's going to criticize you. But you decide, yes, let's give it a try. It's amazing the energy and inspiration you get. This is where you get that real experiential wisdom from your own lives and just how we can make much more of our life in a much more beautiful way. We're not just thinking, oh, I can't do this, oh, this is wrong, I shouldn't do this, that this is not going to work, I can't do this. What the heck, that's your mum. What day is it on Sunday? I didn't hear. Mother's Day, yeah. If you haven't got a mother, she's passed away, adopt one. Just do something stupid and something kind and something nice, if you possibly can. And if you and your mother don't get on, there's lots of other mothers you can go and practice with. But that's sort of the Mother's Day, that doing something which basically sometimes blows people's minds about, that you can do such kindness no matter what. And it energizes you. You know, one of the biggest problems which people have today, I say, being able to understand and give meaning to the younger people in our congregations, in our audience, in the world, is one of the wonderful things, well, one of the problems people have, is that now how many kids get depression? Sometimes people come and tell me that their son is depressed and they just don't want to sort of get up in the morning. They stay at home with their mum and their dad and they don't get a job and they don't do anything. So how can that depression be overcome? It's not just with drugs or with counselling. One of the greatest ways of overcoming depression, which, what is actually depression? Is that, you know, that lack of inner energy. You know, whatever you see is like grey and dull and boring. And they're not just saying this, it's how they experience the world. Such low energy that nothing is stimulating or inspiring. And of course, how is that overcome? You know, one of the ways, obviously, is getting some good advice, not just by listening, but by seeing. You know, by just seeing, like, myself this evening. And I really just don't deserve to be sort of energized, but I am. Why? And that means that you can learn that trick too. Just learn how to be still. Learn how to see the energy coming back up in your body and in your mind. How can you be productive, innovative? I don't mean just as a servant for your boss, but how you can see wonderful things you could do. Beautiful sort of emails you can write. Essays, books you can write. How many of you are authors? Do you think, oh, I can't do that? Who told you? English was my worst subject at school. One interesting thing, how many people are Harry Potter fans? Only one. Oh, goodness. Who was one of the scariest of characters in Harry Potter? Yeah, who else? Number two? Professor Umbridge. Number three? Malfoy. Isn't that scary? I was waiting for somebody to say for Professor Snape. Was he? Is he scary? Yeah. You know that Professor Snape, or his acting name was Alan Rickman. He went to the same primary school as me, and then the same secondary school as me. I only found that out the other day. He came from the same suburb as me, in Acton, in West London. He went to Derwentwater Primary School, where I went, and my brother as well. And then after that, he got a scholarship to Latimer School, where I went to as well. He was about 4 years ahead of me. We both had the same education. I don't know if that's meaningful or not, but nevertheless I thought, oh, that's interesting. But anyhow, you can say about other people, but how can you do this yourself? You know, my teachers, that's my worst subject, was the English. Math was always really good. I could do math just in my, the eyes blindfold. I think I've got 10 fingers to count on. But nevertheless, that math was easy, English was tough. And if my English teachers could ever know that, you know, that the author of, you know, quite a few books, which are legitimate bestsellers, honestly, especially The Opening the Door of Your Heart in Germany, It's been on the bestseller list for about 10 years or 15 years. The German edition in Der Spiegel. Der Spiegel bestseller list. That really shocks me. You know, one of the things which really shocked me was going into Gramedia bookstore, where we've got one person here over from, where are they? They live over in US, but she was from Jakarta. Has she gone already? I thought I saw her on the left. Where are you? Oh, they left. Are they on the left, or they have left? Okay. But just going into this bookstore in Gramedia, the biggest bookstore over in Jakarta. And I saw me in there. There was a big cardboard cutout image of me in the Gramedia bookstore. Because I had a lot of my books were really popular over there, so the whole section, that was really, the word is discombobulating, one of my favourite words. I didn't know what to make of that, but nevertheless, those books really are very, very, very popular. Why? And those were books which were just written so easily. You know, I must admit, I never got any money out of that. It all goes to Buddhist Society, Western Australia. So anyway, never mind. It's great that I can do some good karma like that, but the energy to do that, and I would never, ever, ever, ever think that I could be an author, shocks me. Each one of you, what can you do you haven't tried? So sometimes you just, okay, let's just do it, see what happens. And if you know how to make your mind still, you get all this energy coming up. Once the energy comes up, whatever you write can be quite meaningful, quite useful for others. When it's meaningful and really useful, of course people like to read it. They read that and it sort of, it triggers some beautiful understandings inside of themselves. What a wonderful thing that is to do. You know, just as I was talking there, I just looked up at the clock and I can't believe it. It's 8:50. And I've still got heaps of energy. Shall we go to 10 o'clock tonight? That's what I feel you could do, because I've energized myself. And that's totally impossible when I think how I felt at 6 o'clock when I came in here from the airport. So anyway, I'm going to finish off now and ask her some questions. It's one simple story today, just how you can create this beautiful energy inside of you. Focus, which you can produce things, which you can have happy innovation, connecting with people, and something which overcomes things like depression so easily. Depression is low energy. This is how to get really great energy up. Okay, so questions. Thank you, Eddie. Okay, Eddie, if you do something that's very depressing, just go. Give it everything you've got. Come on, Eddie. Yes, of course.
Ajahn Brahm, you just made a very, very important talk about energy, human energy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, very important, you know? Yeah. What came to my mind, I just want to compliment you, what came to my mind was, it was said that the Buddha, he only sleeps 1 hour a night, you know? It's, you know, okay? He doesn't need that 8 hours which we human beings we need, you know? Because we lose a lot of energy through our hatred, anger, jealousy, revenge, all the negative things, you know? And then he was so calm, in the middle of the night, that gods and devas come down to talk to him. You understand? I was just thinking of that. So what, your experience, all these things? Yeah, it blends, you know.
Yeah, and yeah. Sometimes many things were said about the Buddha, And sometimes he didn't sleep very much. The same with even Ajahn Chah didn't sleep very much. But it's also apparently Margaret Thatcher didn't sleep very much.
Oh.
Only 4 hours a night. But that didn't do her much good.
I don't know, but they say the Buddha only sleeps 1 hour. He doesn't need that.
No,
know.
I think it's usually 4 hours, I think he said.
I don't know.
Anyway, question from India, question from Canada, question from Germany, and one from Borneo. From India, first of all. It's not you, is it? Ask this question? Oh, okay. The conventional world, worldly matters, can easily keep us hooked. How do I practice detachment, keep the right perspective, and yet live in the conventional world? Look, even sometimes, you know, what I said I was doing today, you know, flying around all over the place and just meeting politicians, is that worldly or is that spiritual? Sometimes it's hard to actually to make that differentiation, what you're supposed to be doing and what you actually do, is that really what a monk is supposed to be doing? And often, you know, I always remind myself when I go back to monastery in the cave in which I live, that is a reminder all the time, simple, calm, peaceful, nothing really in there. Yes, there is electricity in there, and it's the only cave I know in the world with a cork tile floor. But other than that, it's pretty simple, as many of you have seen. And that's there to remind me that it doesn't matter when you, you know, see politicians or sometimes presidents and stuff, and dictators. I'm not talking about spiritual dictators. And to this day, I still remember the scariest leader I've ever seen. That was Hun Sen, you know, just the president or prime minister, whatever you call him, of Cambodia. It just got very, to me, just a bad vibe from him. But nevertheless, you do see some amazing beings in this world. And one of the reasons you see all these big shots, but then you do really want to actually to remind yourself of your spirituality, and so you can make use of the best of all the things you do in this world. Even the Buddha met kings and great leaders. He managed to be able to advise them and to try and make them better human beings. When I was at the Vietnamese temple, I still to this day remember visiting Vietnam just outside of Hanoi on the way to Ha Long Bay. There was these mountains, and I was inspired by these mountains because there was one of the early kings of this region in Vietnam to the north who decided to abdicate. And once he abdicated, he decided to become a hermit, which was actually basically a Buddhist monk. There's a big temple at the top of the mountain, and that's where he lived. And to me, when I went up there to see that, I never forget that. That was kind of inspiring. This was, I don't know how many years ago, 700-800 years ago or something. And to see how somebody could be, you know, in such luxury as a king, and then just leave it all behind and live so peacefully and simply up in the mountain. And apparently that did a lot to actually establish Buddhism, you know, in Vietnam. That's why it's a bit of a tourist place now, but it's so high up, it's not many people just dare to get up there. But it's beautiful. So this was a king who was obviously hooked at the beginning, but could let that go when he saw the benefits of renunciation. Worldly matters, yes, we sometimes have to do these things. I may still remember just one of the King of Thailand's privy councillors who was asking Ajahn Chah, said, look, one of the jobs I do, which my responsibilities, which I really just don't like doing, he said, no, I have to sign the official official document when somebody is to be executed. That was his job in the Privy Council. And he said, you know, I only do it because someone has to do it. And Ajahn Chah said, yeah, somebody, but not you. And that was really giving him a hard time. But imagine that was you. He never performed the executions, that was done by other soldiers. He had to sign the official and royal decree. But, so there are some things it's right to detach from. You don't need to be hooked by these things. How do you practice detachment? By being compassionate. Compassionate towards yourself and others. Even just one of the other gentlemen who was talking this morning, he was another senator from Canberra. Pocock, Andrew Pocock or something? Is that right? He was a rugby international star for Australia. And you know, he said that one of the greatest things which he would ever do was actually to spend time in silence by himself, giving him some time out. And then any real problems which he needed to find answers for, he got much better solutions by taking that time out. And he said, you should never feel that taking time out is being selfish and not doing your duties for others. And say, taking time out is one of the best things you can do for others. When this politician said this, and I'd say this all the time, never feel guilty if you take time out. It helps others a lot. And one from Canada, I've been advised to help only if asked by someone I look up to. I go out of my way to help, and it perceived as a form of control. I get punished for my good deeds. Please help. You know that physically I get punished for my good deeds. I get tired and exhausted, and sometimes hungry. But mentally, I always get inspired by anything good I do. So please know the difference between the mental rewards, the emotional rewards you get by helping, and the physical tiredness which you get, which you can sometimes take as a punishment. But nevertheless, when you say help only if asked, there's always sneaky ways of helping. The anonymous ways. You help and they don't know who did the helping. What was this? I don't know the last time I told this story. There was a farmer in, I think, in the north part of California, and quite a remote area, mountainous. And the farmer came across this car which had broken down on the road. Did I say this 2 weeks ago? You're saying yes, I did. I must have been probably over in another talk somewhere. But anyway, this farmer stopped to help this motorist who had broken down. And farmers know a lot about engines because, you know, there's no one else to fix up their engines. So he stopped and helped this gentleman who had broken down in the middle of nowhere, too far away for any mobile phone calls, and could fix up his engine. And the motorist, you know, just was so happy and shook the farmer's hand, and then the man drove off. And the farmer went back to his farm. And 2 weeks later, around 2 weeks later, the farmer got a letter from his bank saying that all of his loans had been paid off, all of his debts were no more, and he had quite a big deposit in his credit account from a gentleman called Bill Gates. That was the driver of the car. Because if you are some big celebrity like a Bill Gates, that's apparently what they like doing. It's just getting in a car by themselves, no chauffeur, an ordinary car so they won't get spotted, and having a bit of ordinariness in their life. And that's what he did. And he's broke down. He can fix computers, but not good at fixing cars. And then sort of, he never let on who he was, but he took down the number plates of this farmer. And he could access these information pretty easy with his connections and paid off all his debts as an act of, like, thank you. So if ever you see anybody who's broken down, it could be Twiggy Forrest. Unlikely, but you never know. Anyway, question from Germany. How can someone relax when there's always pressure, expectation from everyone and almost no understanding from anyone? How can I be calm, mindful, and handle my emotions? There's always one person who will always understand you, or should always understand you, and that's you. And the pressure, expectation from everyone, for goodness sake, don't buy into that. If you try and live up to other people's expectations, you'll die very young. No need to do that. You take control of what you can do, what you can perform. And if it's really good, then people value you, not for what they expect from you, but for what you can give to them. Question from Borneo. What determines someone to meet Buddha teaching in his or her life so he can be free of samsara? If everyone is conditioned, then what determines if she is to meet the way out of samsara? Everything is conditioned, but it's just way too complicated to figure out those conditions. But nevertheless, you know, sometimes weird things happen, and sometimes, like, what is it? One of the women, I think, yes, on the aircraft today, she was telling me that she had a bit of a trouble with relationship, and she just went online and got that talk on the four ways of letting go. And that meant so much to her. Now she listens to those talks all the time. How did that happen? There was some sort of problem in life, and you look for a solution, and there's no other solutions available to you. So these days people go online and click around until they find something which means something to them. And that was what meant something to her. Last one from Finland. I have OCD that gave mental tiredness. Therapy and meditation has helped, but inner anger has surfaced. Welcoming and acceptance still rages during meditation. How can it be overcome? And it gives mental tiredness. Don't ask too much of yourself, but give yourself more kindness. One thing to be able to do, again, is just do those, you know, already people have asked for photographs of me this evening. You know, just Nicholas took a quick shot of me and you all saw me smiling. That's my reaction whenever I see a mobile phone pointed at me. It's automatically, I don't do it on purpose, I train myself that way. How did I train myself that way? Standing in front of the mirror every morning for 2 years and doing my 10 push-ups. Now people think that's just a joke, but it's not. Just a mental tiredness. If you can't actually do the meditation to get that energy up, look at your face in the mirror and smile at yourself. Make a face, you laugh. That's physical. The problem here is it's too intellectual. Therapy, even meditation has helped, but inner anger has surfaced. You can't think your way through that problem. You feel your way through it. We are far too intellectual and not enough like that emotional intelligence. Feeling what works, what doesn't work, what's really good fun, what really helps. That's why I often say, never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. What is truth? What's right in front of you right now? The power of kindness, the power of stillness. Okay, so thank you again for staying, and I'm sorry if I spoke too much again, which is mind boggles me that I didn't fall asleep during the meditation. But anyway, thank you all for actually for staying and listening to everything. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Now you can bow 3 times to the Buddha if you wish, and then we can all go back and do whatever we need to do. I need to interview my pillow.
Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.
Thank you for coming. An Indian monk from Mumbai, actually from the forests. It's a forest monk, Dutanga monk. You haven't laid down for how many years? How many years has he not laid down?
Ten
wasa, but he hasn't laid down keeping Dutanga.
Bhante teacher is 25 years.
Oh, your teacher, yes, yeah. Very good, excellent. So his teacher lives in the forest, and for many, many years hasn't laid down for such a long time. Okay, very good. Thank you for coming. So if anyone has any questions, fine, but please don't stay too long asking questions, because my energy will soon go. You get on? Good.
Thank you.
I told you.